We talk a whole lot about rights in this country. We might not be a country if the writers of the Constitution had not hustled up a Bill of Rights to get recalcitrant states to join the baby republic. We've all heard somebody say, hey, I got rights. True. We have rights as individuals, but there's a movement to identify, enhance, and perhaps expand the rights of communities to make decisions and have those decisions stick. Ann Neeland is an attorney and activist on community rights through Community Rights Lane County, and it looks like Community Rights for Oregon as well. Ann Neeland, welcome to the Jefferson Exchange.
Thank you so much, Jeff. Really appreciate the opportunity to be with you.
Community rights do seem to be certainly a heating up issue right now. We talked to Thomas Lindsay a couple of months ago. What is the genesis of the heating up?
I think what it is that people are beginning to realize that when they come together in their community to make a decision about what the values they hold in their community and come together to protect those values, they discover that they actually lack any meaningful legal authority to protect those things. And so I think as people become aware, particularly of the kind of corporate harms that are coming into our community, not so much in Oregon, but elsewhere in the country around fracking, around corporate water withdrawals, around factory farms here in Oregon, around issues around GMO agriculture, other fossil fuel infrastructure projects, aerial spraying of pesticides, and those type of corporate harms, that we actually lack any meaningful authority to say that these activities are not in our health, safety, and welfare interests.
So it is primarily a reflex to the power of corporations, people who have great economic means to bring to bear to be able to affect change, and we apparently are powerless before that?
Pretty much. I think what happens is that people do organize and want to say no, and there have been, at least in Oregon, when it comes to pesticides, there's been long histories of activists pushing back and asking our government to say no to this really quite shocking activity of aerially applying pesticides, and yet after decades of activism, they've been unable to make any meaningful headway. And so I think people like that who've been engaged in the system and can't get any meaningful change that recognizes the impacts of these activities on their well-being, then come together and realize we need to do something differently in our activism to be able to make a meaningful change.
But isn't... I mean, joining together to do things as a community can be identified as government, too, can't it?
Yes. I think, some of the challenge in this particular work is that government is very much hand-in-hand with corporate rights in this country, and corporations have been recognized as having such extensive rights in terms of not only the Bill of Rights protections, but other constitutional rights and other legal privileges that our government in large part works hand in hand with corporations to protect those rights and to exercise those rights. And so that really leaves the community and the people in those communities out in the cold when it comes to decision making around those kinds of activities that really are harmful to us.
Is part of the goal here then to force government to take action, sort of like the climate change suits filed on behalf of young people like in Eugene?
I don't think that this movement has any hope that our government is going to take the action necessary. I think there's really pretty good evidence that despite years of begging and pleading our government officials, that those kinds of actions don't happen. And so really the community rights movement is about communities coming together and writing and passing the laws themselves. At least in Oregon, where we have the initiative power, we can come together as community members and write and pass the laws that we want to see on the books to protect the values that we hold dear and that advance our economic, racial, social, and environmental well-being.
Now, I know there is a ballot measure coming I want to talk about in just a minute. I want to remind our listeners we're talking about community rights here on the Jefferson Exchange with Ann Neeland, who's an attorney and activist on community rights, with Community Rights Lane County. And are you with Oregonians for Community Rights as well?
I am part of that group as a larger member of the state. That is a statewide group that's advancing a state-level constitutional amendment to recognize our right to local community self-government.
Mm-hmm. Well, our listeners can join us on the exchange at 800-838-3760, by phone, by email, jx@jeffnet.org. So the earth that exists before any constitutional amendments, what do courts recognize, if anything, at this point in the way of community rights? What sort of doctrine is there? And I know often we start talking about legal doctrine back in the Magna Carta and everything, but I mean, what basis is there for asserting community rights?
Well, it's not from what you get from looking at case law to date. but it's what you find when you look back at the founding of this country and really the principles that were being fought for at the time of the American Revolution. And I think we've taken for granted, you know, that we live in a democracy in this country, and that's somehow what was fought and died for in the revolution, that we revel in the benefit of those efforts. But you know, I think it's increasingly becoming common knowledge that we don't live in a democracy, and that those values that were fought for early on when people came together to throw off the shackles of the English monarchy, that those values have been lost in large part, and that that was an effort at that time to recognize that big top-down government was not the government we wanted in this country, but rather we wanted a government that was by and for the people. And I think you find those values very clearly in the Declaration of Independence, the Articles of Confederation, and looking back to our history. And you can see that some of those things began to go awry with the writing of our Constitution. And although there's some remnants of those values of local self-government and the power of the people in the Constitution, much of that was surrendered to really adopting what was basically English common law at that point.
When you talk about it in these terms, it sounds almost like small government conservatism. But when I look at the list of rights that communities are trying to assert, they seem like anti-corporate, or therefore somewhat liberal issues.
Well, I think it's really about the authority of the community to decide for itself what that community looks like. And I think it's a value that people in large part sort of assume that we have, that when we live in a place that we get to decide what our community looks like and what happens here. And I think it isn't until corporations come in with these big projects and decisions are being made by corporate board members maybe thousands of miles away about what happens in our community that people realize that they actually lack that authority at all. And so I think that's the effort, is to get people to recognize that we lack that authority, but that that's not true to what this country's roots were, is that we really were about a country of we the people, and that we are the sovereign authority of this country, and certainly not corporations.
So what is the hottest of the community rights issues in Oregon? Is it the LNG pipeline? Is it GMO? Is it water in Cascade Locks? I mean, all those seem to be at the forefront.
Yeah, so, I mean, all those things are really great examples of how corporations get to make decisions in our communities that we have very little power to control. I think, you know, there are Coos County and Columbia County have now initiatives that they're collecting signatures for to come on an upcoming ballot to address the fossil fuel issues in Coos Bay. They're looking to stop the Jordan Cove project and the infrastructure to go through that county. In Columbia County, they're also addressing fossil fuels and recognizing their right to a sustainable energy future. Here in Lane County, we are working on the GMO issue. I think what is important about this work is that it's not issue-specific work. It's really these initiatives take shape around a specific issue because that's where you can see how the existing structure of law comes to play in terms of our inability to make a decision. But really this work is about understanding a broader systemic problem, that we have a system of law that simply doesn't allow us to make these decisions, but does in fact recognize extensive rights of corporations to make those decisions, and that we have a structure of law that has empowered a legal fiction, which is a corporation, to have greater rights than we the people. And that's, we think at the community level, that's a significant problem.
So in attempting to assert these rights, I mean, are you saying in essence that Jackson County or a community within it could say, nope, sorry, if you're going to build an LNG pipeline, it's not coming through here, and force it to divert around that county or that community's borders?
I think that would be within the power of the county to say.
Hmm.
And they would have a right to say, because that is their community, and those pipelines have significant environmental, health, quality of life impacts. And so why should it be a corporation, and in the case of the LNG pipelines, a Canadian corporation exporting natural gas to the Far East, that gets to decide that you have to give up your property to put a pipeline through and take the risks of high-pressured gas being pumped through pipelines through your property. I mean, at a fundamental level, it's really pretty outrageous.
Let's take some calls here. We have, let's go to Malcolm in Grants Pass. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange with Ann Nealon. We're talking community rights.
Well, good morning. I'm really glad you brought this program onto the air. I've been concerned for some time. My sister's really active in community rights up in Portland, and I've expressed this to her, and she's expressed it to her group, too. But I hope you'll have an answer for me. If the local governments can trump state governments in the way I think you're proposing, it could backfire on some levels, like local governments could say, oh, no abortion in our town, or no gay marriage, or we're going to reinstitute the sunset laws, or, as has already been proposed many times in this state, let's revoke all the land use planning. So do you have a way to deal with that?
All right, excellent question. Thanks for that, Malcolm.
Yeah, thanks, Malcolm. That is a great question. And so the way that the community rights has approached that can be best understood by looking at the state constitutional amendment. And the state amendment seeks to recognize a right of local communities to make those decisions in their community for their health, safety, and welfare. But it also does not allow communities to make or pass laws that erode existing protections or erode in any way existing constitutional rights. So the right that would be recognized at the state level, being the right of local community self-government, would not authorize communities to pass any laws that would erode existing rights and protections. And so that's the effort to see that, yes, there are fundamental rights that must be safeguarded against from any community's local decision making.
So then would individual rights still be supreme to community rights?
Those at the level, yes, the protections and constitutional protective rights would be supreme.
All right. I don't envy anybody trying to come up with the wording for this ballot measure that you're aiming for the November 2016 ballot. Are signatures being collected yet?
Not for the state-level amendment. That has been filed. Well, let me correct that. We're collecting what we call sponsorship signatures, so we're required to submit 1,000 signatures before the Secretary of State will even review the initiative for compliance with the pre-election requirements. So we're in the process of gathering those signatures. And you could see the language of the amendment and the efforts around that I think it's the Oregonians for Community Rights website.
I think so, too. That's why I was looking at them just a little while ago. Okay, we'll make sure we get the link to the right place on our website to get a look at that. But essentially, you're asking people to, if this gets to the ballot, you would be asking people to vote to change the Oregon Constitution to assert some community rights.
Yes.
All right, let's take another call. We have Ryan and Eugene on the line. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange with Ann Neeland. We're talking community rights.
Well, I thank you again. The last caller made the same comment. Thank you for this conversation. You know, I think what you're trying to get at is really important, and I do worry about the fact that we have the Bill of Rights and not the Bill of Responsibilities, because those were assumed of what, you know, a landowner or a leader would have done for their community on some level, and I think that there needs to be a balancing piece. I do worry about trying to do it within law, however. I think that, you know, the corporations as individuals and having individual rights is a ridiculous construct and should be removed, of course. But there are many opportunities for communities to join and conjoin. Unions are a good example, you know. And so I just, you know, I think it's great. Thank you. Thank you for pushing the rock. It's awesome.
All right. Thanks for that, Ryan. Appreciate it. So this is fairly tricky territory, I'd have to think, Ann, because you start running up against the assertion of the person with an economic interest that you're denying them the value of their property or their ability to make money, that sort of thing.
Yeah, I mean, and that's very much true, and I think that is definitely one of the fundamental stumbling blocks. But I think, you know, that is very much at the root of some of the struggles that we find ourselves in when it comes to climate change, is that we have a constitution and a system of law that has prioritized property and property rights over our sustainability and our other really economic and social justice issues as well. And so when we put property on a pedestal like that and we let the rest fall by the wayside, I think we find ourselves in the situation we're in, where we now are facing what could be devastating climate change. We've teed ourselves up for what some think of as a sixth mass extinction, and we're going to instead give rights to property and to corporations and say, sorry, those things have greater rights than the people on the planet to clean air, clean water, edible food, places to live and that kind of thing.
It sounds like a race to assert rights.
I'm sorry?
It sounds like a race to assert rights.
Well, I think it really calls us to ask what is our intention for our long-term sustainability and livability on this planet. It's not just about whose rights are more important or a popularity contest. It's really about saying we've come to a point on this planet where we're making the circumstances inhabitable. And until we choose to change our system in a way that is supportive of survival and humanity and nature, we are going to put ourselves off a planet, pretty much.
You were involved with the no on GMO vote in Benton County, which failed, weren't you?
I was the attorney for the group trying to qualify that initiative for signature collection, but I wasn't involved in the campaign.
All right, I'm just curious to know if that was cast as a community rights measure.
The Benton County GMO initiative was a community rights effort, yes.
All right. So the fact is that you've had a couple of bumps and efforts so far, but a lot more lies ahead with the efforts to assert community rights.
I think every growing movement has bumps, and I think we're in it for the long haul, and we hope to see positive change that'll bring this planet back to a livable place to live. So.
All right. I'm relatively certain we'll be talking to you again down the road. Ann Nealon, attorney and activist on community rights, thanks so much for joining us today
on
the
Jefferson. Thank you, Jeff. Have a great day.
All right. You too.